This is Totally Cool Tech, the show that brings you the hottest in cool technology. No matter if it's old school or new school, high tech or low tech, it's all still cool tech. Welcome, everybody. This is Totally Cool Tech Podcast Edition number 551, solar powered for Wednesday, May 16th, 2012. I am Norbert Davis, your host. Totally Cool Tech is a proud member of the techpodcast.com network. If it's tech, it's here, where all our member shows produce family-friendly and work-safe podcasts. We are also part of the Blueberry.com podcast community, where podcasters and listeners can all come together. So please go check out both of these sites for other great podcasts. You can also find us over at iTunes and a couple of the various other podcast directories out there. But just go to totallycooltech.com and you can find me. All right, cool. Hey, today's show is powered by ice cream. Because I just had some, so that's what's keeping me going here. And I call in this one, this episode, solar powered, because two reasons, really. Well, one is kind of the reason, but it also is part of, anyway, I'm sunburnt, so that's kind of the solar powered thing. But the reason I'm sunburnt is because for my job, my regular 9-to-5 job, I'm in construction, so it's really not 9-to-5. It's more like anywhere from 6:30, you know, to 6:30, depending on how things go. But be that as it may, I'm getting an assignment to our renewable energy division, and I'm working on, well, I'm learning how to install photovoltaic systems. Actually, I'm not doing it. Our company is hired to install these, but we have other people, like, you know, electricians and other subcontractors that actually put this in. But we're building solar farms. And one of these that my company has previously built is actually owned by Google. That's pretty cool. I can't tell you all anything else, but it's owned by Google. So, I mean, it's not really a corporate secret or big surprise or anything like that. But I guess Google's bought a couple of these things around, I don't know, California, the United States, whatever. But one that I know of is here in where I live, Elk Grove area in California. So going to be doing that. So that's why I'm burnt, because I've been out walking the sites, learning some of this stuff, you know, what I got to look for and what do we got to coordinate, things like that. Because that's what I do. I'm a mechanical coordinator. Anyhow, so walk, like I said, walking around. I got sunburned the other day, and there we are. There we are. There you go. Here we are. Whatever it is. All right. Hey, you know, I got a couple things on this this show. I'm not going to go too long this time. The last two times, I took the podcast out about an hour, and that was way too much. I like to keep this in about the half hour range, so. We're going to kind of go a little bit quick through this, and let's just go ahead and jump on in, because we don't have a sponsor today. That's why I'm powered by ice cream. That's our sponsor, I guess. I don't know. All right. Hey, how would you like, I believe it's Windows 8 Pro? Yes, Windows 8 Pro for $15. Well, it's going to be an upgrade. But so Microsoft supposedly will be offering a very low-cost upgrade to Windows 8 Pro for customers who purchase a Windows 7 PC after June 2nd. Why June 2nd? I don't know. It just happens to be it, the date they picked. But according to insider sources at a Win Super site, the upgrade will only cost $15 and will help motivate customers who may otherwise hold off on a purchase until the next generation platforms released. So it's kind of like when they did, you know, with Vista and Windows 7. You bought a Windows Vista machine, I thought it was a free upgrade to 7, or it was a very cheap upgrade as well. So, you know, they did this last time, and this would be pretty cool. So, yeah, if you're thinking about getting a new laptop, if you can hold off till June 2nd, you'd be able to go ahead and get an upgrade to the Pro version of Windows 8. Regardless of whatever version of Windows, you know, comes on the machine, you'll be able to go ahead and do that. So pretty cool. And I mean, if I can afford a new machine with the Windows 7 on it already, I mean, I would go for this. But I can't, so I won't. But hey, maybe you can. If you do, let me know. I'd like to see if you like Windows 8, because I am playing with it in a virtual machine. I'm just doing a few testing on a few things. Got all that installed, all the regular, you know, Windows 8 beta installed on the VMware, and just need a little bit more time playing with it. So, and I got some other good stuff. I'll have to. You can't see this. I'm holding up some HDMI cables. I have an HDMI. USB 2.0 to DVI/VGA converter box that I'm reviewing, and I actually had a DVI to HDMI. I don't know if you can hear the cops outside. There's a officer, or is it, maybe it sounds like a. Is that an ambulance? Probably an ambulance. Anyhow, I have one of these cable connector changers that goes from DVI to HDMI, and I was able to actually get it to blow up onto my TV here. Awesome fun. So I got a review for that coming out here pretty soon. All right, next up, everybody's had the emergency alert system, you know, thing go off, you know, whenever there's a disaster, an emergency, you know, whether it's weather or whether it's, you know, man-made problem. We've all seen them come on TV or the radio. You've heard those tests. For the most part, it's been tests, and every once in a while you get the actual alert. Now they're looking to go ahead and do the wireless emergency alert system, and it will go live this month, and it delivers location-based SMS warnings. Pretty cool. I guess it's going to be a national service delivering relevant, timely, and geo-targeted alert messages to mobile devices. I guess, you know, say the president, a federal agency, well, by order of, I guess, the president, federal agency, or a state or local alerting authority creates and sends out an alert to FEMA's federal alert aggregator. And then the federal alert aggregator then goes ahead and receives the alert. The federal alert aggregator translates the alert into a standardized format for carriers to broadcast the alert on any of the CMAS-enabled mobile devices. And then an alert broadcast goes out, and then there's an alert delivery. So I guess with the alert broadcast, the alert is then sent to the wireless carrier systems, which can then alert all of their cell towers within the area. And then the wireless carriers deliver the alert to their subscribers who own the CMAS-enabled mobile devices within the geo-targeted areas. So that's actually pretty cool. And I guess Sprint so far has been the only one that has signed on to deliver the SMS warnings. Now, with the secured anticipation of all four major carriers and smaller regional operators, that gratis service is set to go live this month, covering near active mobile users. So your smartphone should be able to get this. And probably your regular flip phone style phone, you know, regular style phone, whether it be flip or candy bar style or whatever, should be able to do that. You know, most modern cell phones. And I guess using a point to multi-point system that targets at-risk subscribers, the National Weather Service, FEMA, FCC Department, or FCC and Department of Homeland Security backed initiative works by sending location-based messages to of about 90 characters or less to nearby handsets in the event of an imminent meteorological threat. The mostly opt-out service will also be will also accommodate amber and presidential alerts, although you won't have that flexibility for missives sent from our heads of state. So the next time your phone goes off strangely, has a weird auditory tone, you might want to check that out. It just could be an emergency alert. So be on the lookout for that. Looks like it's going to be pretty cool. Found that via Engadget. I thought that was actually pretty cool. Now I can be annoyed on my phone and my TV and my radio all at the same time. Beauty. All right. Now, I thought this is some serious cool tech right here. It's a retinal prosthetic powered by light. It's a new type of eye implant that requires less hardware and could restore more vision than some of the existing devices right now. Retinal implants powered by light could reverse some vision loss with some simple surgery. The new implant, which works like a combination digital image chip and photovoltaic array, which I'm kind of working on stuff like that, well, really huge photovoltaic arrays, require much less bulky hardware than previous designs. The devices have yet to be tested in live animals or human patients, but the implants are creating excitement among researchers because they have a greater pixel density and may restore some vision that other retinal prosthetics have done before. So I guess the new design is being talked about in the journal Nature Photonics by the device is being designed and researched by Stanford University in Palo Alto, California, and combines infrared video projection goggles with a small wire-free chip implanted inside the retina. So I guess the camera on the goggles transmits video to an image processor, which then sends a signal back to the infrared projection screens inside the goggles. Other researchers have tried to develop photovoltaic retinal implants in the past, but it doesn't work, or they had not worked before. And the light that you get back into the back of the retina at the equator on a sunny day is not enough to power a retinal implant. But I guess the researchers at Stanford are saying, so the Stanford system doesn't rely on the light that comes into the eye. It uses a projection system to make much more intense signals, and the researchers selected infrared light because it won't damage or heat up any of the eye tissue and will not be picked up by an image, and it won't pick up any remaining light sensitive cells. It won't be picked up by any light sensitive cells that are in the eye that are still kind of working and confuse the image. So they're giving it one specific type to the sensors, and it won't screw up the signal, I guess, going to the brain. So I guess the Stanford scientists have mapped the resulting nerve activity in mice, and now they're experimenting on various designs, including a flexible silicon array that can bend to the curvature of the eye. And the most pixel density so far has been 178 pixels per square millimeter. By comparison, the first retinal prosthesis to go onto the market last March in Europe, made by Second Sight of Sylmar, California has 60 pixels in total and requires a lot bulkier hardware. So that's cool. They have a lot, they still have a long way to go, but that is pretty slick. And there's a little picture of this thing. It's looks like a pretty cool, still maintain their connectivity and everything. Wow, that is pretty slick. So if that interests you, go check that out. That was from Technology Review, published by MIT. They always got some good stuff. All right, now here's something a little less serious, but very, very fun. This would be the slingshot bow and arrow. Man, this just looks cool. And I guess this gentleman has created all sorts of slingshot things. He has like the slingshot channel. And he came up with what he calls the sling bow, which is a slingshot bow and arrow kind of mashup. He creates his own bow. It doesn't look completely like your standard bow and arrow style bow, or especially not like an English longbow. However, he uses rubber bands, which, I mean, these are specialized rubber bands, as his strings. And he made a pretty darn good looking bow. Now, apparently he made this out of plywood, so it does have some pretty good strength to it. There's some video that goes along with this link here. Found this by Geeky Gadgets, and they've always got some great stuff. This dude's pretty serious, and he's got some pretty good stuff, and he's got like three different levels of rubber bands that he uses. One he calls one for the kids, and one regular, and then one really spear gun style rubber band. Pretty cool, and it's a little bit different because it has actual rubber band or string stops, so that it doesn't whack your hand, because if they let it go, because it's rubber, it would the rubber would flex and whack your hand. So he has a string stop to protect your hands, which is pretty cool. And go check that out. Thought that was really, really cool for a little bit of lightheartedness, I guess, if you want to call it that. But yeah, a different way you can build your own bow. Pretty cool. All right, from Uber Gizmo. How about building your own Tesla gun? This is a DIY Tesla gun that actually works and looks like it's incredibly dangerous, obviously. I mean, well, anything with electricity is dangerous. But this is a Tesla gun where it doesn't really fire out any shots, like, you know, wouldn't fire out a bolt of lightning that would go across the room or anything like that. But it does, it's a working Tesla coil, really, built into the shape of a gun and things like that. But it's really cool. You got to see this cool video. And this researcher, Robert Flickinger. He went around and created his own. Not only did he manage to produce a pretty realistic-looking Tesla gun, but he managed to create one that actually works, that is capable of shooting out volts of electricity. Now, like I said, not across the room, but it works. It's a working Tesla coil. And pretty darn cool. Takes 18-volt drill battery and pumps that up to 20,000 volts of electricity. So check that out. He's got his video from his website and all that. Pretty darn slick. Like I said, Uber Gizmo, that was pretty cool. All right. If you're like me, you love your Wi-Fi in the house, right? So you went out and you bought yourself, you know, the latest, greatest router. If you got the latest, it's an N, right? Well, guess what? You're behind the times. We're old school now. The A, B, G are definitely 802.11. AC router. That's right. You heard me. A 802.11 AC router. What is this all about? Well, it's the new standard, and it's the new level of Wi-Fi that is now available from Buffalo Air Station. It's the WZR D1800H, and they also have the WLI H4D1300 wireless media bridge. And this latest router was first unveiled back at CES earlier this year and provided a wireless connection speed of up to 1.3 megabits via 5 gigahertz band. Now, that's around 30% faster than the current standard, with an improved range as well. So that is awesome. I don't know what the range is on this. I'll have to find out a little bit more about that. But the latest router here being launched by Buffalo is a true dual band and will support existing 802.11 N, G, A, and B. The router offers users 1300 megabits on the 5 gigahertz band, and only when used with the 802.11 AC client, such as the new media bridge. So you got to have both of these to do it. And then via the 2.4 gigahertz wireless band, the new Buffalo router offers the 3x3 setup of the regular wireless N standard that caps out at 450 megabits per second. And I guess the router also, I guess you can purchase both of those for $180 each. Oh, $180 each. Wow, that's massively expensive. I think I can wait to get really good Wi-Fi, but I also want devices that can handle this as well. I don't want to have a client. I want one that'll do everything and have devices that will hook up to it without having to have dongles and whatever. So maybe by the time my cell phone plan is up and done, my contract's done, and I'll have stuff out there for that, which is about another year to 18 months. I don't know. Something like that. Yeah. I hate cell phone plans. 18 months almost. Yeah. My wife's is the last one on our plan to roll over. So anyway, I'll probably roll over dead before that. Anyway, hey, we were talking about the Windows 8 a little bit earlier here in the show. What about a Windows 8 tablet or hybrid? They might be on sale in time for Black Friday 2012. This is from i4U News, and I guess there's a rumor that says the first release of Windows 8 tablets will go on sale in November. And according to, you know, Black Friday typically goes about the 23rd. Could be pretty cool. You know, I'm looking at the new Windows 8 interface. If you've looked at that thing, I'm not really thrilled. It kind of reminds me of the Xbox dashboard, but it's unimpressive. It's very forgetful, very boring, very humdrum, dull, washed out looking. These little panels that are flat colored. It doesn't amaze me. It doesn't awe me. It doesn't make me want to look at it like an iPad does. You know, I think Windows really does need to look at what Apple does and one-up them. They need to compete, because this interface, I'm telling you right here, not that great. It does not impress me at all. So, just saying that, Microsoft, it's not that very, you know, impressive to me. So, hope your market researchers really know what they're talking about and help you out, because I think you need some help. Just saying. I like Windows. Not saying anything else is better or anything else is worse or whatever, but I like Windows. All right. Okay. Again, from Uber Gizmo, found some pretty cool stuff there. Fujitsu. Gosh, I don't know. Is developing a smart collar for dogs. You got a dumb dog and need a smart collar? Well, these people got your answer for you. And I guess it's going to help monitor their health and activity. So, you know, it's going to be a chip-enabled collar that you put on your dog, and it'll be able to track, you know, their health and, you know, the heartbeat and their, you know, respiration and how much movement and activity they have, you know, when they're awake, when they're asleep. You can kind of track all that stuff, and you'll be able to, you know, put that to the cloud, and you can go ahead and have that sent over to your vet, all that kind of stuff. Or maybe, you know, you're at work and want to kind of get an idea of what the dog's doing. You can figure it out that way. It may not tell you what, you know, if he's outside or not. Maybe it does. Maybe it has an external temperature sensor as well. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that this thing can do. But it will not have a GPS tracking chip or anything into it, which is kind of like, you're going to do all that and you're not going to put that in there. That's just kind of stupid. But what do I know? All right. So, yeah, no price that I see on here about that. But, yeah, you know, it'll be coming out. I guess they're going to be demonstrating the technology Thursday and Friday of this week. Yeah, so later this week they'll be putting this out. So let's keep an eye out for that, will we? All right. If you're a dog lover, I know you will. I got two dogs. I love them. But I don't think I need to know, if you know, exactly how many steps they take a day. I know they sleep a lot, so what the heck. All right. I pay attention to my dogs. Plus, you know, my wife stays at home, so she knows what the dogs are doing anyway. Okay. From the What the Heck Were They Thinking file, Kodak had a secret nuclear reactor loaded with enriched uranium hidden in the basement in New York. Well, not New York City, but Rochester. I guess down in the basement, of, you know, wherever they were, in Rochester, New York, they had a nuclear reactor loaded with 3.5 pounds of enriched uranium. You know, kind of like they put in atomic warheads, but that's not enough to make an atomic bomb. However, terrorists and anybody else, you know, bad people would like to be able to have, you know, that kind of stuff. So, nobody really knows why Kodak had this, how they got permission to do all this kind of stuff and whatever, but I guess back in 2006, they actually started to dismantle this. Did not know about this until it was recently leaked by an ex-employee. Wow. Pretty weird. I guess the existence and the whereabouts were purposely kept vague, and only a few engineers and federal employees really knew about the project. I guess they were doing it for, where was it there? They were doing some sort of closely guarded secret work with that, and some sort of imaging and things like that. So who knows what was really going on, but interesting. A private nuclear reactor. That just sounds weird. With weapons grade uranium. Scary, scary, scary. Alrighty. Hey, are you an NES fan? How about a lunchbox made from an NES gaming console? Man, somebody put one of these things together and it looks awesome. I guess, you know, they're using the Nintendo Entertainment System lunchbox. This is pretty good. It has a little, has a lock on it like you would find on a briefcase, which, I mean, it's a lock. It actually has like a little key type latch. Now, I don't know if that's just, you know, super glued on or some, or, you know, hot glue gun down or something like that. But somebody took a Nintendo Entertainment System, the old style Nintendo Entertainment System, and riveted on a briefcase handle and got the lock on there. I don't know how they got the lock on, if it's glued or what, but it kind of looks like it's double sticky taped or something. The handles look like they're riveted on, but anyway, that's kind of cool. And I guess the creator, Luke Blackford, stated that he plans to create more in the future. And so if you really want one of these, go over to his Etsy shop for the photos and everything on that. And we will have the link for that for you. But it's a Nintendo Entertainment System lunchbox. Pretty cool. Thought I'd just bring that up. I think my wife used to have the old Nintendo. No, she had a Sega Dreamcast. That's what it was. She had the Sega. Yeah. I never had a Nintendo. My parents couldn't afford it at the time. But, yeah, the first modern, I guess, gaming system that I ever got, my wife bought me the PlayStation 1. Ooh. And I think we still actually have that somewhere. I think it's at my mother-in-law's house. The kids would use it when they go over there. I got to get that out and got to get that back from her. And I'm going to start making a little museum, I guess, of all my old tech. Start putting that around. Saving that stuff, you know. Could be valuable one day. Right. Okay. Hey, found this over at Tech Dirt. And two things I want to talk about Tech Dirt. Number one's going to be this article, which, okay, that's cool. But, you know, the more I look at the Tech Dirt logo, the more it reminds me of Tech TV. That's just outright thievery. I mean, it's so close, so similar, that it's like, yeah, you stole it. But anyway. All right. Yeah, I guess, you know, this article over at Tech Dirt is about musicians realizing that they don't need major labels anymore. And it's good to see that musicians, you know, are getting smarter and they realize they don't need these huge conglomerates to be able to market and sell their goods, their music, their art. And it shouldn't be. Create it yourself. Make a deal with Amazon or make a deal with, you know, iTunes. Sell it on there. You keep a lot of the money. You don't need to have a recording or a, you know, a manufacturing plant to make all the distributed CDs or anything like that. I mean, you could, no problem there. You can even do your own if you needed to. There's plenty of places that'll go ahead and create those for you. You don't need to go through a label or anything nowadays. You do it yourself. And I would rather buy music right from the artist. I mean, that's, I guess you kind of figure that's like, you know, fresh off the vine, you know, so it's as pure as can be. It's not getting hyped by a music industry, and you're paying the artist for their work rather than paying this conglomerate to keep all their A&R people and their, you know, marketing and all that kind of stuff, where the artists get paid very little actually from the work they do. So I'd rather do this. So yeah, cool. You know, I guess there was a one person here they're talking about, Jordis Unga, a singer who appeared on two reality TV shows, Rockstar NXS, I remember seeing that, and The Voice, has decided that she didn't want to sign with a label. And while she didn't win on either show, she did build up quite a following, and she decided to, for her debut album, she might as well hit up the Kickstarter system and ask for $33,000, which she got in less than a day. In the first day alone, I guess her project on the Kickstarter raised over $50,000. That is awesome. Now, that is something you can get behind. Back it that way. And if anything, you owe your fans, in a way, literally, because you're borrowing their money to create your album. But at least you're getting supported by your fans that believe in you. So that's pretty cool. And then you go ahead and you make the album and, you know, you pay them back. And, that's how it should be. We don't need a big business in there. We don't need the record industries in there. I mean, heck, you know, the biggest paid people in the record industry are the lawyers. So let's get rid of them. They don't make music. They just clog up the court systems. All right. Well, hey, enough of a rant about that from me. That's actually going to be it so for tonight. So I'll try to keep this short, right around 30 minutes. So if you have any questions, comments, hate mail, whatever, just go ahead, email me, Norbert@totallycooltech.com or tctpodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please recommend us to a friend. I really would appreciate it. All of the show notes and links and any contact info will be at our website at www.totallycooltech.com. And if you know about some cool tech you want us to talk about or think should be on the show, please send me an email, audio, comment, whatever. Send it to Norbert@totallycooltech.com, or you can send it to totallycooltech.com podcast listener line. You can just go ahead and call that up at area code 540-999-TECH. Just look for me on Twitter if you want. Let's just search for TCT Podcast. I'll be there somewhere. And, yep, I think that's going to be it. So if you have anything, you want to talk about anything, want to find out more about what I'm doing on my solar sites, just go ahead and contact me. And I'll be happy to talk with you, chat with you, whatever. I'm trying to think about maybe doing another podcast. I don't know. The wife might not like it, but I don't know yet. I've got an idea for a name. It would go on Monday nights. I'll probably try and do it in the evening, about 6 p.m. Pacific, so about 9 p.m. Eastern. So if that's something that you all might be interested in, I'm thinking about doing like a Google Hangout type thing. I'm hoping to get the Google Broadcasting. I got to see if that ever kicked in to my my site there for my TCT podcast, Google Plus site. And if I can do the broadcasting, what I'll do is I'll do that. We'll have a hangout. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to get like three guests, and we'll do like a 30-minute show. And, you know, each of us do about 5 to 7 minutes on a topic and discuss it. You know, bring up a topic, give a little bit on it, and then discuss it for about, you know, 5 to 7 minutes, and then go through everybody's, and then we'll kind of give an overall discussion rating, see who won. Kind of got an idea and a name for this. Want to call it Monday Night Tech. And if you're interested, let me know, would you? Norbert@totallycooltech.com or tctpodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Would you be willing to hang out and work with that, deal with that, check it in, you know, check out what's going on, be part of it? I'd love for you to be part of it. So, if you're interested, think it's cool, would like to watch, whatever, just give me a buzz. I really would like to hear from you. if you'd like to see that kind of startup. I might just kind of do a few of these things, test it out, see what it's like. I'd be recording and all that kind of stuff and then put it out as a podcast, most likely. So, all right, everybody, that's going to be it. I will see you next time.